Sister Sonia Johnson Byers and the Reverend Kennedy Hampton, my favorite singer. I'm hoping he's going to put a CD out one of these days so I can hear him more than once a year. Thank you for inviting me to speak to the parish today. Why did they ask me to speak? Who am I? I'm not a powerful politician. I'm not a distinguished theologian. I'm just some guy. I'm some guy with white hair that shows up with his wife, Nancy, and sits in the back and sings the songs at the Love March every year for the last 25 years. Thank you. How did we come to be a part of the Love March? And we do feel like we are a part of it. We're proud of that. We both grew up in the 50s and 60s. We came up in the north. Nancy's from rural western Pennsylvania. That's Joe the Plumber territory, if you dig that. You may have seen Nancy's car parked on Lawrence Street. It's the one with 120 Obama stickers on it. That's my wife. I grew up right here in New Haven, Connecticut, and I'm proud of it. A town that has many faults, but used to have even more faults. I think we're making progress. We were a little too young to actively participate in the civil rights movement down south, but we saw the headlines, we read the news stories, we saw the film footage on TV, and we instinctively knew, because kids usually do know, and this is for the kids usually know who's right and who's wrong. Yeah. That's right. We knew that the people marching peacefully were right, and that the people with the attack dogs and the fire hoses were wrong. We knew that the kids who wanted to go to high school in Little Rock were right. We knew that the kids and young adults who wanted to sit at the lunch counters in Georgia were right. We knew that the intelligent young adults who wanted to be admitted to the state universities in Mississippi and Alabama were right. And we knew that the people who were standing in their way and blocking the door were wrong. It's that simple. It was very clear. And that was part of the brilliance of Dr. King and his associates. They knew that Nancy and I and millions of other Americans who had never experienced illegal segregations and the horrible degradations of the Deep South, they knew that we would witness their actions via modern media. And they knew that most of us, especially the kids, they knew that we would know who was right and who was wrong, who were the good guys and who were the bad guys. It was very, very clear. And so we learned. We were taught by a master harnessing the tides of history for us. Fast forward 1982, I was all grown up. I was driving my car on Orange Street towards downtown New Haven on the morning of January 15th when I saw a police cruiser pulled across the road and a cop telling me to stop, which of course I did. And I wondered what was up. And I saw marching up Lawrence Street, maybe about 100 people all dressed up because it was cold. And they were smiling and clapping and singing. And I said, what's this? What's up? And at the front of the line, I recognized the former mayor of New Haven, Frank Logue. And I knew Frank Logue to be a very honorable man. And I knew that he had been a pallbearer, an honorary pallbearer, at Martin Luther King's funeral in 1968 in Atlanta. So that helped me figure out what was going on. Next to Frank Logue was the most charismatic man I've ever seen in a long orange and black dashiki robe with a natural out to here, maybe. Yep. And he had a big grin on his face because he was leading that march down the street and he knew what he was doing. Standing next to him was somebody with a large American flag because they were talking about the American dream. They knew that. They were keeping the memory alive. I want to be clear about this. In 1982, the civil rights movement had sort of receded from the public consciousness. The Love March in 1982 was a little bit lonely. There wasn't a lot of hoopla around it. YBC wasn't there. Channel 8 wasn't there. The Register wasn't there. This is before Stevie Wonder had worked so hard and with so many people for the passage of the national holiday. This is before the Irish rock group U2 released their beautiful song about Martin Luther King called Pride in the Name of Love, which took the message to millions of new kids and new generation around the world. It's before Nelson Mandela was freed from the South African prison he had been in for 25 years and became a distinguished, internationally recognized politician and Nobel Prize winner. This is before all of that. And in 1982, like I say, the movement had lost a little bit of steam. So when I saw the Reverend Hampton and his parish marching up Lawrence Street, it was like a light went off for me. It was like a beacon. I asked around the neighborhood, found out that it happened every year at 11 o'clock on January 15th. I went home and told Nancy about it. She was excited. We both made a commitment to clear the work time next year on the 15th and show up. And we did. We just had no idea it would be so habit-forming. Thank you. I'm not ashamed to admit that we were a little afraid at first. We were afraid because we were different. We were afraid we might not be welcomed into a society where we looked different from everybody else. But of course, we were wrong. We were very warmly received from jump, and we have been ever since. In conclusion, what I'd like to talk about is, in the 25 years that Nancy and I have come to the march, we've also made several trips down to the Southland to visit some of the famous locations of civil rights history occasions. We've been to the King Center and Ebenezer Baptist in Atlanta, quite rightly a national monument. We've been to Montgomery and visited the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, which is the first parish that Dr. King had in the 50s and helped, of course, with the bus boycott and Rosa Parks. The Dexter Avenue Baptist Church sits at the bottom of a great big hill, and at the top of the hill is the Alabama State Capitol building. Very imposing. It's even more imposing when you realize that that very same building was the capital of the Confederate States of America in the Civil War. The same building. At the top step, there's still a gold star where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office for the Confederate States of America in 1861, I think. And down that hill is this little church, which energy. It still calls itself the church with for people on the go. And you know that in 1955, that's where they organized the bus boycott. That's where they made worldwide history, in the shadow of that great big capital. We went to Birmingham, Alabama. We visited the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, which I would recommend to anybody if they ever have a chance. It's a great museum. And we attended church across the street at the 16th Street Baptist Church, which is the church where the little girls died when a bomb blew up in the church in 1963. A bomb in the church. This is what these people back in the 50s and 60s were facing all the time in the South. We went to Selma. We climbed up over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. You've heard of it. Over the Alabama River. It's a high and narrow bridge. It's scary up there. It's a steel frame bridge and the wind blows right through it. And we walked up there. We were scared just walking over it. And we pictured in our mind what it would be like to try to march over it with police attacking you with billy clubs and tear gas and dogs and horses. What must have gone through those marchers' minds? But they did not give up. They tried three times in 1 week. And finally, because they were smart as well as brave, they got a court order. And they marched over that bridge. And they took 5 days to march 50 miles to the state capitol, formerly the capital of the Confederate States of America, where they got voting, they signed voting petitions and introduced voting rights legislation. And that very year, America passed the Voting Rights Act in August of that year. Because of their bravery, because of their heroism. That's how it gets done. We learned from all these places that Martin Luther King was not alone. We rightly remember him today as the courageous and smart leader of a great movement, but that movement included hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. People all across America who marched, and prayed, and signed petitions, demonstrated, went to jail, volunteered their time, volunteered their services, and in some cases shed blood to help right many wrongs. That's how it always gets done. It's always a lot of people. There are only a few members of any generation that are born to be leaders. But we're all born to serve. We can all serve in one way or another. If you're lucky enough to have a great leader, and I believe maybe America has experienced some good fortune recently in that regard, you should follow that leader. You should take inspiration from that leader's example. You should follow your heart. You should follow the teachings of Christ and Martin Luther King. You should march for love, march to keep the memory alive and growing, and don't just march today on the 15th. March all year long. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much.